Everybody's out here talking about Gordon Hayward. The Celtics seem like a destination for him because, you know, Brad Stevens coached at Butler and Gordon Hayward, you know, coached at Butler. And all I'm saying is, if I ask you to look at me and say that, you will bust out laugh. You couldn't look me in the eye and tell me that's the reason why we're having this damn conversation.
They already have a relationship. He's familiar with his coach.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what we talk about here. That's why y'all that's why the people in the crowd are clapping. You know, and I know exactly why Gordon Hayward gets those claps in Boston.
There's the one and only, always classy, Bomani Jones. And he was hating on you, and he was hating on me, and he was hating on this city. That was a couple of years ago when Gordon Hayward made his way here with the Utah Jazz, but the rumors were already sort of running rampant here that the Celtics were going to be the target for both Gordon Hayward. And, you know, Gordon Hayward was interested in the Celtics, and the Celtics interested in Hayward. And Bomani implying there on, by the way, a national broadcast. So he is nationally televised on ESPN, and he's hosted nationally syndicated radio. So it's not like Bomani's in a small market somewhere and we just pick up the audio online. No, that is not the case at all. This guy perpetuates the fact that we are still a very racist town, the most racist town in the country, and he perpetuates it often. And whether we like him or not, whether he gets ratings here when he's on the air in Boston or not, and I know the morning show does a very nice job sort of pointing out the fact that I think he got a 0.0 on his radio show here in Boston. But so what? That's irrelevant. You know, I travel the country every week, so I listen to local sports talk radio, and so many of these secondary markets in our country really don't have 24-hour local news sports talk radio, let alone two stations like we do here in Boston that stay live and local for the majority of a 24-hour stretch. I mean, look at us here. I get off the air at 2 in the morning, and essentially that gives the station 3.5 hours to sort of rest, repeat, and reset itself to get ready for another continuous 21 hours of programming. That's what we do here. So I get off at 2, and by 5:30, you know, we're back up with Mutt and Callahan, and we do it again day after day after day. These other stations in these secondary markets around this country, sure, they'll have some live programming, usually maybe a live morning show, maybe a live afternoon drive show, usually one or the other, and then some sort of local programming if they've got one of their pro teams or a collegiate Division I type team. And that's it for live and local programming. So they rely on nationally syndicated broadcasts like a Bomani Jones, like what you get from ESPN, like what you get from NBC Sports, like what you get from Fox Sports, like what you get from Yahoo Sports Radio. So they all pick up some of these sort of syndicated shows. And Bomani gets ratings in other markets. He does, because it's literally the only option available to sports fans driving around in their car. And if you're from some, you know, secondary market out there in Kansas or, you know, in Charlotte or something like that, and you're listening to Bomani Jones perpetuate the fact that you are racist here, I feel like there's got to be some way to stand up to him. And the problem is that Bomani Jones ran away from the station when Kirk was here and refused to be a part of the morning show. Kirk tried to, get on Bomani's show in a roundabout type of way, and Bomani sniffed it out and didn't allow Kirk to do his thing. But I feel like there's got to be some sort of public recourse. There's got to be some sort of way for us to stand up and defend ourselves and at least make the case that you guys aren't racist and that I am not a racist. And I feel like we did a damn good job of that the other night. And I don't think it was done on purpose, by the way. I don't think we did a damn good job to show Bomani Jones and it was all part of an act. But there was a very raw and natural reaction from you guys, a visceral reaction on Monday night when Anthony Davis and the Pelicans came to town, right? I mean, it was awesome. I enjoyed it. You know, people got up on their feet and they let Anthony Davis know that, hey, if you get here via trade, if in 2 years you come here via free agency, we are going to celebrate you. We don't care if you're white, black, red, we're indifferent to your color. You are a spectacular basketball player. So please come to Boston. Right? That's what the message was from Celtics fans in the Garden the other night. Matter of fact, Anthony Davis talked about it, you know, for a little while after the game, and he was humbled by Celtics fans sort of making him feel appreciated. But then he immediately got back on track and he said, look, I'm playing for the Pelicans right now. I'm trying to do what I can to get the Pelicans where we need to be. So I respect him for that. But I feel like immediately when I watched that, I thought to myself, Bomani Jones. I mean, Bomani made such a production out of us being excited about the prospect of an all-star. By the way, at the time, what, a 25-year-old all-star in the Western Conference averaging 23 points a game in Gordon Hayward, knowing that there's mutual interest from both sides. Yeah, Celtics fans, let him know that, hey, if you can find a way to get here, whether it's via a trade or via free agency, we're going to embrace you. And it's got nothing to do with the fact that he's pasty white with blonde hair. And for people that think it's because he's pasty white with blonde hair, I don't want to know you. I don't want to think anything. I don't want to think that people that I associate with in this region think like that. I really don't. I would love to think that we've all graduated from that way of thinking. It's archaic. It's insulting. But Bomani Jones and guys like him continue to perpetuate, you know, Jamel Hill, Bomani Jones. There's a bunch of them out there. Even, you know, guys out there like a Max Kellerman that has nothing good to say about this city. You know, quite frankly, they're allowed to perpetuate this because Boston is such a great and dominant sports market that anytime Boston is brought up on one of these national sort of formats, guess what? They have a chance of getting ratings because they know that we are going to react regardless of the outlet, regardless of how small the outlet is or how large the outlet is. Because we're dedicated sports fans, we are some of the best sports fans, if not the best in the country. But Bomani Jones, he's allowed to say whatever he wants. I mean, I can't imagine the freedom that that feels like. I would love to get on the radio and say whatever I want. I mean, not for nothing. You know, Kirk didn't say whatever he wanted. He didn't. Believe me, he held back a lot of the times. Okay? But we saw what happened to him. He essentially got blackballed off the station, off his number one morning show. And whether you like Kirk or not, whether you agree with him or not, whether you think he's great or a clown or not, is irrelevant to me. I've heard all the reasoning for both ways of thinking when it comes to Kirk. You know, I don't care. I frankly don't care about that part of it. What I do care about is Kirk learned that you can't always say everything that you want to say. There are ramifications for it. There's consequences for it. Why are there no consequences when guys like Bomani Jones get on their damn soapbox and they call the city a racist city? And they literally, you know, make up stories about coming to Boston and everybody sort of looking at them funny, right? Why are they allowed to do that as black people? Is it because they're black and we're afraid to touch it? Is it because they're black so we say, okay, you know, we got to take them at their word. They're black. They're African Americans. So we really can't say much about it. Because if that's the case, then that's not fair. That's not right. I mean, I would love nothing more than to ask Bomani a very respectful question. What did he think? Because I'm sure he saw it. What did he think of the ovation that Anthony Davis got from you guys? Right? That's what I want to know. I want to know so desperately, what were his inner thoughts? Did he think it was an act? Why didn't he touch it on his show? And why won't he debate anybody in Boston? Why won't he talk about this? Why won't he defend his words in this market? Because I look around here and I don't consider Boston a racist town. I mean, if there's people out there in the listening audience that consider Boston still a racist town, I'd love to hear from you because I would love to know why. Maybe it's just because I don't have that sort of perspective that Bomani has, and maybe it's all about perspective. Maybe I'm wildly irresponsible for even bringing this up as an Irish white guy, right? Maybe I shouldn't be the guy to bring up this conversation and want to get into it, but I can't help it. I mean, I'm an Irish white guy whose favorite sport is a sport dominated by African Americans. Does that bother me? Do I look at these guys and think lesser of them because they're not white? No, I could care less. They entertain the hell out of me. I love watching basketball. I don't care what color they are. I don't care if they're men or women. Yeah, I watch the WNBA. I don't care if it's the National Basketball Association or college basketball or the Big Three in the summer. I love watching good basketball. It doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. And I wonder why guys like Bomani are allowed to have this archaic way of thinking without consequence, because when I hear this stuff and then I hear it go unchecked and then when I hear evidence to the contrary, like I heard at the Garden on Monday night, evidence to the contrary of Bomani's national take here saying that you guys were racist, I think to myself, wow, Bomani is the reason why, and people like him are the reason why race relations in this country are still the way they are. Because if you continue to perpetuate these stories, these lies, these fabrications that Boston is a racist town, and you're not only doing it to Boston, but Boston is the biggest example, probably the biggest market that gets sort of this identity, right? Then what are you doing? You're not doing anything to improve race relations. You're actually continuing to bring them down and make them worse and continuing to widen that divide between all of these races. And eventually, I would love nothing more than for people to just be people. And I think that that's sort of a silly dream. I don't think people will ever look at each other simply as people. I feel like a good number of people do. And you don't see color. You don't see race. You don't see sex. And that's fine, right? But it's not realistic to imagine a world where 100% of the people feel that way, because people are imperfect beings. But I look at Boston and I just don't see the issue here, especially compared to a lot of the other towns that I visit for my job. And when I travel around this country, I'm telling you right now, in talking to people and in just sort of getting the vibe of these different communities that I'm in, I don't get the vibe that in Boston that we're this racist place. And maybe we were when Bill Russell was playing. Really, maybe we were. And I don't have the sort of personal perspective to bring to that conversation. But neither does Bomani Jones. Neither do these people that get to perpetuate this idea. You know, Jemele Hill gets to perpetuate this idea that Boston is this racist place, and that the only reason that we wanted Gordon Hayward here is because he looked more like Larry Bird than a black star, or than Jay Crowder at the time. Because Jay Crowder was also, you know, upset 2 years ago when you guys gave Gordon Hayward a standing ovation. But the reason why Crowder was upset had nothing to do with race. It had to do with the fact that Hayward was going to come in and take Crowder's spot on the team, essentially. And, you know, Crowder wound up replacing Hayward out there in Utah and vice versa here. Again, nothing to do with race. But when you look at what happened here Monday, I can't be the only one. And if I am, well, then I don't get it. But I can't possibly be the only one that said, where's Bomani Jones? Where's his take on this? And I waited until now. I waited 48 hours since that game ended. And I heard the morning show touch on this the other day. They didn't get too detailed into it, too far into it, because, quite frankly, there was nothing really new to add to the discussion. You know, we've got our hate, we've got our vitriol for a guy like Bomani and for the stuff that he says about the city in which we live and work and love, right? And you can get around that conversation. You can have that conversation. But I was really hoping that at some point over this 48-hour stretch between then and now, Bomani would have addressed it on one of his outlets, be it radio, be it TV, be it a podcast with somebody. I was really hoping that Bomani would touch on this so that when we came in here tonight, there'd be another element to bring to the conversation. But there isn't. He's been radio silent. And Bomani's a big NBA guy. He is. So there's zero chance that Bomani did not see your reaction to Anthony Davis. So what does he do? Well, because the comment was, what, 2 years ago, he gets to run away from it. There's no accountability there. There's no opportunity for Boston to defend itself and to say, hey, look at what we did for Anthony Davis and compare it to what we did for Gordon Hayward. How is it any different, Bomani? And Bomani, maybe he's got an answer. Maybe Bomani's intelligent enough to back up what he said. But you know what? I believe he said what he said to get a rise out of you. I believe he said what he said to get a small ratings bump. I believe he said what he said, and I believe it's dangerous. And I believe Bomani knows it's dangerous because, guess what? The longer that you perpetuate the lie, the longer the lie exists. And how many times have I said this on this program, that perception is more powerful than reality? Well, in this case, in this situation, it really is. Because the perception of Boston being a racist town still sticks around to this day. And a lot of it started because of things like the busing situation, stuff like what Bill Russell went through. And when you look at the amount of years that have gone by since, you know, Bill Russell went through his problems, the busing situation here, what, in the late 70s, early 80s, even the comment that John Dennis made was, what, over 10 years ago, right? So what about today, right now in this city? I mean, if you're an African-American, do you walk around here on eggshells? Do you feel like this is any more of a racist place to live than anywhere else in this country? Because maybe I'm insulting you right now. Maybe I'm way off base. And if that's the case, you know, I apologize. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think that ESPN owes Boston an apology. And I feel like Bomani Jones owes Boston an apology. And if he doesn't have the balls to hop on, you know, my radio show or the morning show or do something here with one of the local stations to back up his position following what he saw and we saw on Monday, then he's even more of an ass clown than we thought he was at the start of this conversation. And it means that the guy doesn't have the backbone or the balls to back up his position. And in radio or TV and in the media, you can say a lot of wild things. I mean, just for an example, you guys hear me fill 4 hours at a time by myself. I am sure I have tripped over my own words. I am sure I have contradicted myself. It's not easy to sit here and to talk to yourself for 4 hours at times. You know, at times it's easy, the conversation's flowing, and it's nice and easy. Other times you're sitting there, you can say something stupid. And if Bomani wants to say that he said something stupid, maybe he can get away with that. But what he cannot get away with is completely avoiding the topic and a complete unwillingness to discuss it. Because when you insult not only a town, but an entire region, an entire fan base, and you do it more than once, then don't you owe that region, that town, that fan base some sort of an apology or at least a little bit of your time to back up your position when that fan base, that town, has literally, in the same identical situation that you called out when the roles were reversed and it was an African-American potential Celtic target, not only did the Celtics fans embrace the idea of bringing Anthony Davis to the Celtics, they let Anthony Davis know that he would be embraced as a Bostonian and as a Celtic. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is Late Night. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Your thoughts on the Celtics, this impressive 7-game winning streak, Kyrie Irving playing at this MVP level, all of that, plus this Bomani Jones conversation, really bringing it back around because of what happened here on Monday with the Pelicans coming to town, Anthony Davis coming to town, on top of all of the rumors surrounding Anthony Davis and the possibility that the Celtics might be a fit, might be a target. Celtics fans, you guys are intelligent. You guys know the conversation happening right now. You let him know. You let Anthony Davis know that he would be a welcome addition to the Celtics. And I say bravo to you guys for doing that. I think that sort of stuff is impactful, and I think it's meaningful. And these guys remember it. But Bomani Jones, I don't think he remembers it at all. Matter of fact, if somebody asked him right now if it happened, he might have to claim amnesia. It is Sports Radio, WEI. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports, and then more of your phone calls on the Celtics, on Bomani Jones, and on, quite frankly, is Boston more of a racist town than I think it is? All that and more at 617-779-7937. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It's Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. Find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I tripped over my words there because I'm reading a tweet here from Jose Canseco tonight. It says, "Hey, little buddy, at Real Donald Trump. You need a bash brother for chief of staff. Got a secret reorganization plan already. Also worried about you looking more like a Twinkie every day. I will buff you up in daily workouts. DM me. Yes, we can, Canseco." So then, I mean, that's funny. Whatever, Jose Canseco is a bit of a clown. But a guy that's not a clown is Steve Burton. So Steve Burton is a serious sports guy. Like, he's a borderline sports news type guy. I mean, he's very serious about what he does. Probably the best in the city at what he does. No disrespect to anybody else. And it doesn't hurt that, you know, he has me on Sports Final occasionally. So all of those reasons, you know, Steve Burton, I guess, just got off the phone with Jose Canseco. And David Wade tweets out, he says, "Jose Canseco was just on the phone with Steve Burton. He says he is locked out of his Twitter account, and whoever's tweeting is not him." It's just, this stuff is absolutely hilarious. The president, Jose Canseco, you cannot make this stuff up. But it is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you at 617-779-7937. Really, this Celtics team continues to impress. They continue to roll winners of 7 consecutive games right now. And I look at this team and I think to myself, okay, you know, what's next? You know, when I look at this team, I think to myself, what is next on the horizon? What is next for this team to prove? And I think, well, you know what? They're going to have to play some stronger competition to really reel in the rest of the Celtics fans out there. Because I feel like it's tempered excitement right now. Like, I feel like we're all optimistic. It's been fun watching this team play better. But you guys want to see them beat some proven winners, beat some legitimate competition. But, I mean, I look and it's Friday against the Hawks. It's Saturday against Detroit. I mean, the Pistons are a pretty good team. They're a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. But then it's a rematch against the Suns. I mean, that Suns team is abysmal, even though they beat the Celtics. And then it's a good game Friday the 21st. That's going to be the first real, quote-unquote, test-type game for the Celtics team to really prove it to you guys. So just a few days before Christmas, a week from this Friday, it's Boston and the Bucks. And I look at that team, I look at that game as an opportunity to really shine here and continue this thing and continue the momentum that this team has built. But that is still 10 days away. So until then, I mean, you've got Phoenix, you've got Detroit, and you've got the Pistons. You've got the Hawks. That's 3 more games with a winning streak at 7. So despite the poor level or relatively poor level of competition for the Celtics team, you look at it and you think to yourself, well, this could very well be a 10-game winning streak. And that would be a very impressive feat. I mean, 7's already impressive, but 10 would certainly be a very impressive winning streak, regardless of where this team is at and regardless of who their competition is. And when they were 10-10, if you would tell me that they were going to reel off, you know, 7 consecutive wins with a possibility of 10 consecutive wins, I wouldn't have believed you. Because the one thing that this Celtics team had not been for the entirety of the season is consistent. And that's what they are right now. They're getting consistent play with inconsistent lineups. And that's a bit of a contradiction, but it's the most impressive thing about this team right now. And I say it because on a night-in and night-out basis right now, you don't know who's available to play. I mean, they've had to play games without Kyrie, without Gordon Hayward, without Al Horford, without Gershon Yabusele, and without, you know, key players, without guys that are legitimate key contributors. Aaron Baines, Daniel Tice missed a stretch for a while. Guys that are not only, you know, starters and prospective all-stars, but also guys like Tice and Baines that are just very important pieces to what this team is doing. So for that reason, I look at this team and I say, okay, who cares about the competition? Keep the competition to the side. Who cares? This team is a team that's not whole. This is a team that still is undergoing changes, and they're managing to undergo those changes and deal with these issues and continue to still win games. And to me, that's a mark of this team finally showing some maturity. So that first 20 games of the season, they seem to be a very immature team. They weren't dealing with their internal changes very well. They weren't dealing with the internal drama and struggles very well, meaning who's going to be the man? Who's going to get the shots? Whose night is it not to get shots? Who's going to be willing to, you know, say goodbye to some of their shots and some of their minutes for the betterment of the team? You know, that's the thing here. And when I look at this team, and I look at it and I say to myself, really? They've shown a lot of maturity, and that to me is the primary difference between Celtics 1.0, we'll call Celtics 1.0 the first 20 games of the season, and Celtics 2.0, the last 7 games. It's this sudden level of maturity, this ability to deal with the injuries, this ability to deal with the minutes night in and night out, this ability to say to yourself, okay, it's Kyrie's night, I'm not going to be jealous if you're Terry Rozier. I mean, you saw Terry Rozier following the Pelicans game, giving Kyrie Irving, you know, the sort of rabbit fingers during the live interviews. And that sort of stuff is impressive because it means that they're getting along. It means that they're having fun. And with this team having fun, they're a dangerous basketball team. With this team having fun, they're returning to the team that they were last year. And for me, I look at that as one of the biggest signs of improvement and one of the biggest signs of optimism if you're a Celtics fan. It has to be considered one of the biggest and best signs of optimism if you're a Celtics fan. And no, they cannot control the schedule. So I'm so sick of hearing people say to me, yeah, but Gilroy, the competition sucks. The level of competition right now is just not that good. Who cares? That's irrelevant at this stage of the game. It's irrelevant in this part of the conversation. And for people that think it's relevant, you're not looking at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is this team had enough talent for Las Vegas to consider them the second best team in the NBA and a team with a legitimate shot to go to the NBA Finals and do some damage, by the way, in the NBA Finals. Not win the Finals, but nobody was predicting a 4-0 sweep by whoever represents the Western Conference. So that's where they were before they even played a game. And we had this team dead and buried after losing 10 of their first 20 games. And now we don't want to give them any sort of credit for winning their last 7. Meanwhile, if this were the Patriots, you guys wouldn't care if they were beating the pants off the Bills. That wouldn't matter because a win is a win is a win. That's what I hear in the NFL all the time. But because it's the Celtics and because it's an 82-game schedule, an 82-game season, and because this team has had, you know, some playoff success, I feel like, in the last 2 years, people aren't going to get excited about this team until they're back in the conference finals. And I feel like that's what fans are waiting for. Fans are waiting for this team to get back to that point. Fans are waiting for this team to get to, you know, that point in the season, that point in the schedule. And if you're doing that, if you're one of those fans, if you're one of those fans that's unwilling to buy in right now because, well, they're what, 27 games into the season, they're riding a 7-game winning streak against sort of lesser competition, well then, quite frankly, you're missing out on a good time. You're missing out on sort of what makes a basketball season fun, what makes a basketball team fun to root for. That's why I love the NBA, because, you know, things can change on a dime, and for the Celtics team, things have changed on a dime, and it's only going to get better from here on out. I mean, you look at the next 3 games, They should win all three games. They are clearly a better team than the next three on the schedule, be it Atlanta, be it Detroit, and be it the Suns. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but there is also a measure of the revenge factor against the Suns. So until that Bucks game a week from Friday, things continue to be sort of light and easy for this Celtics team. And for a team that went 10-10 in their first 20 games, that next 10 games being light and easy is exactly what this team needed to not only get back in the race in the Eastern Conference, but also to get their sort of good feelings back, to get their good vibes back, to get their mojo back, to become that team that they thought they were again. Because they had got so far away, they had drifted so far away. If you watched this team, and you know, relatively the same players, right, as last year's team, if you watched this team throughout the first 20 games of the season, they were unrecognizable compared to last year's team. Even though you're watching literally the same players, they were playing an unrecognizable version of the game of basketball. They were playing the same game, but playing it in a drastically different way than how they did it last year, and how they've ever done it with a guy named Brad Stevens at the helm. So we're talking about this, and talking about this team, and talking about their ability or inability to really make their mark on this city. And I feel like one of the ways that they can make their mark on this city, not only is with prolonged playoff success this year, but also the acquisition of another star. And we all know that Danny Ainge has been sort of on the hunt for a guy named Anthony Davis for quite some time. And Celtics fans let Anthony Davis know on Monday night that, hey, you are welcome here. We would love to see you here. You're a guy that we understand you could build this team around. Hell, I've said it a million times, and I'll say it a million and one. I love Jason Tatum's game, and I love Jaylen Brown's game. But when I look at this team, and I look at the unique factor that makes this team, let's put it this way. There aren't many teams in the NBA that are considered legitimate threats to go to the NBA Finals, where you're also talking about quite possibly trading some of your best players away to bring in an Anthony Davis in the offseason, right? Those two conversations generally don't happen, generally don't jive at the same time. They just don't. But for this Celtics team, not only this year are they in that conversation, in that mix, especially if this is in fact who they are, especially if this Celtics team really is the team that we thought they were going to be. It just took them a while to get there. Meanwhile, come this offseason, if Anthony Davis really is available, well, then some of the key contributors to this edition of the Celtics, be it Jason Tatum, be it Jaylen Brown, be it Al Horford, they'd have to be on the table to make that trade happen, to pull the trigger on a deal like that. And that all gets back to the fact that Danny Ainge is always looking for that next transformative talent. He's looking for that guy to pair with Kyrie Irving. And I know a lot of you people out there, and Michael Hawley led the charge here on WEEI a couple years ago. And the guy that we'll have on coming up in the next segment, Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports, you know, he also was right there with Michael Hawley and saying that, you know, Isaiah Thomas was better than Kyrie Irving. I think we all fell in love with IT. And I think, you know, 2 years later, we fully understand what Kyrie Irving is and what deficiencies, what weaknesses Isaiah Thomas really had as a player. A lot of those were hidden here. You know, Isaiah Thomas, great talent, great player, not transformative. A guy like Kyrie Irving is a transformative talent, and believe you me, Danny Ainge is after that next transformative talent, and if it's Anthony Davis, it's Anthony Davis. But I don't think Anthony Davis is going to look at Boston and say, I don't want to go there, it's a racist town. I don't think he's going to look at Boston and say, you know, I would think that team can compete for championships for many years, and I love Brad Stevens as a coach, but he's white, and they're all white there in Boston, and they don't like black players, right? But Bomani Jones, he can say stupid things. He can go on the air, and he can talk about you guys. He can talk about me. He can talk about all of the white people in this region and the people in the garden that night when we gave Gordon Hayward a nice ovation 2 years ago and say, you know, and I know that they only cheered for Gordon Hayward because he looks more like Larry Bird than the next NBA superstar. And he can say that without consequence. He can say that without having to come on the air and back it up. He can say that without having to defend his position now, 2 years later, when the same fans in the same building stood and cheered for Anthony Davis because he is a potential great player target for the Celtics. Race is irrelevant. I mean, I reached out to Bomani Jones. He has blocked me on Twitter, did not respond to my emails. I know he won't go on the morning show. And I think That is the most childish thing in the world. I really, truly, honestly believe that my 8-year-old son would handle this in a more mature manner, in a more mature way than Bomani Jones. The only difference is Bomani has a national outlet to express his racist views, and he's allowed to go unchecked, and he gets paid a handsome, handsome salary for doing so. I don't know. He must have done something very right in this world to have all those freedoms. Meanwhile, he doesn't have to back up any one of those freedoms when, quite frankly, it looks like Boston proved them wrong. But he can continue to go on and perpetuate his lies on TV, on the radio, and get paid to do it. It makes no sense to me. It must be a great life for Bomani Jones. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. If you're on the line, stay on the line. I see you there. When we come back, we'll hook up with Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports. He'll join us next right here on Late Night. It is Late Night right here, Sports Radio. WEI. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. I don't always get to the text. I don't always read the text. But when they're good, I certainly do. So a couple texters here real quick, and then we'll get to Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports to talk about what we saw tonight out of this Celtics team. Sorry, Pat, I like you a lot, but you can't say that in capital letters here, maybe Boston used to be a racist town. Bill Russell was not celebrated in this city because of his race. The Red Sox were the last major league team to integrate, and those are just the easiest examples to cite in this context. African Americans tend to avoid New England, especially as a residential destination, and it goes on and on. I would tone down your feelings on this one tonight. And I thank you for the text. I do. And just because we might disagree here doesn't make it a bad text. It's actually what I love about doing radio, because a conversation can be had. And quite frankly, you're making my point. I wish that I could have this conversation with Bomani Jones. I wish that he hadn't blocked me on Twitter. I wish that he hadn't ignored my emails, my request for a conversation. And my desire for a conversation isn't to do what maybe Kirk would have done or the morning show would have done and just yelled at him. I would have loved nothing more than to have had a conversation to hear his perspective and hear him defend his position that he sort of made national news with, really putting down this city, putting down this region a couple of years ago by your response, by our response as Celtics fans to Gordon Hayward entering the building as a member of the Jazz, and the Celtics fans' excitement knowing that he was an impending free agent and Boston was a potential destination. How does he justify that position with what he saw on Monday night with those same fans in the same building from the same city giving the same reaction to another potential target for the Celtics that happens to be a great basketball player and happens not to be white in Anthony Davis? I am not doubting, I am not questioning the city's identity as a racist town from 30 years ago, from 20 years ago, from 50 years ago. I wasn't around then. I wasn't old enough 20 years ago. I wasn't alive 50 years ago. So I can't really speak on what it was like then. What I can speak on is what I've learned since covering the Celtics. And I've learned this. I've learned that Kevin Garnett was reluctant to come here because of everything that he had heard about this town secondhand. And he told us all that. He told reporters that. It's all out there on YouTube. He had heard things secondhand, but he had never experienced them for himself. So he comes here. He takes a chance, falls in love with the city, and considers himself a Celtic for life, says he still bleeds green. I mean, that's what I'm paying attention to. I'm paying attention to the way that this town came to the defense and really support of a guy like Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce stabbed 11 times in this city, in this town. It wasn't a racist event. He was stabbed by another African-American. And Celtics fans helped will him back onto the court and loved him for 15 years as if he were Larry Bird, as if the only thing that mattered were the fact that he was a great basketball player and not a great white or black basketball player. So for those reasons, yeah, I mean, I can't do anything about the way that this town was viewed because of mistakes that were made a lifetime ago. I can't. What I can do is defend this city now, this region now, and the way that sports fans have treated their athletes in my 19 years covering sports in this town. But it is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. On the line with us right now from Barstool Sports, you guys know him as Greeny. He's Dan Greenberg. Dan, thanks for staying up late with me tonight. And I feel like our last couple of conversations have been certainly a lot more positive than the first few throughout the first 20 games of the season, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy what a couple of injuries and a common cold will do to a team. But they look fantastic, so I'm happy we can be positive for once.
So you brought up the injuries and the common cold, and while sort of it's funny, this team, the fact is, when they've been shorthanded, they've been kind of better than when they've been, you know, a full available roster. when you look at that, is there actually something to that where it might be easier for this team to sort of carve out their identities, at least for a game in and game out basis, when they are shorthanded?
Well, I think at least, you know, last year was a little bit different because it was a team filled with rookies and, you know, they went on that incredible run. This year, and more specifically this stretch with guys out, I mean, the schedule definitely helps. I think, you know, Washington may end up being a playoff team when it's all said and done, but, you know, the Chicagos and the New Yorks, I mean, you would expect even shorthanded that, you know, the Celtics would be able to beat those bottom-of-the-league teams, but there's no denying that they're moving the ball. Guys are stepping up. Players like Morris and Kyrie are sort of shouldering the offensive load. And defensively, you know, Marcus Smart is making an impact. So I think it's one of those, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, maybe Brad should just find a reason for someone to be hurt every game. I still think this team, you know, needs to play at full strength. But, you know, the one thing that has made no sense, but at the same time perfect sense for the last 2 years, is that the hospital Celtics never lose.
So when you look at this now, I mean, there's two schools of thought, and I'm sort of battling internally with these two schools of thought. You know, I'm a little bit psychologically damaged, and, you know, medication does wonders. But one side of my brain says, you know what, this team's won 7 games in a row. They've righted their wrongs. They're back on track. They're, what, a game behind Philly and Milwaukee for second place in the conference. So despite everything that went wrong, they're right there knocking on the precipice of really where they should be with 3 consecutive games remaining here against the Hawks, against the Pistons, and against the Suns. A revenge game, so to speak, against the Suns before things get more difficult with the Bucks. So there is a scenario in play here where this winning streak really could and or should get up to 10. But then you look at this sort of stretch of games, this 10-game stretch, and they're really not a bunch of world beaters. I mean, you got a bunch of bottom feeders and mediocre teams in here. So when you look at this winning streak of 7 games and the potential for it to grow to 8, 9, or 10 before things get more difficult, how much stock do you put in the fact that these teams that they're playing, their competition, really isn't all that good? They're mediocre at best.
Yeah, but I think, remember, I mean, this is a Celtics team that, you know, it's not always a cakewalk, even when they are playing the Phoenixes and the Atlantas and the Knicks of the world. So, for me, I put, you know, I'm not going to say this is as good as if they were to go into Oracle and blow out the Warriors, but I put stock into, you know, how they're blowing these teams out. They're averaging over 120 points or something close to that during this stretch, and that's because the ball is moving. That's because defensively, you know, they're trying and there's, you know, legit effort for a full 48 minutes. So for me, I don't care that it's coming against the Wizards or, you know, the Bulls or anything like that. I just needed to see that this team was capable of having a consistent effort. And then the line of thinking is now that we know that they can do it, you get everybody back and you give this same sort of effort and energy against a good team like Milwaukee or Philly on Christmas. Like, okay, now we're rolling. But you know, I'm certainly not going to say, oh, you have to just throw everything out because they're playing bad teams when bad teams have beaten this team earlier this season.
It was 7 games ago, though, Dan, when they inserted Marcus Smart into that starting lineup, and they haven't lost since. But more importantly than the win-loss record is they're the number one team offensively in basketball over that 7-game stretch. I believe as of this morning they were the 3rd-best defensive team over that stretch and number one in point differential over that stretch. So you tell me, how do you take a guy that has been sort of, I mean, throughout his career, he has been more of a detriment on offense than somebody who complements an offensive team in Marcus Smart, really, and then your offense improves. It improves drastically, Dan, not just a little bit. I mean, it improved drastically by taking out an offensive elite-type player and putting in an elite defensive player, and yet your offensive numbers go through the roof.
Yeah, and I think it's just his infectious play. I think part of it has to do with, you know, the law of averages sort of came back to our favor where, you know, Tatum has really turned the corner offensively. Kyrie's hitting threes that maybe weren't going down early in the year. But the benefit of having Smart in there is offensively, he wants to move the ball. So he's going to give you that effort and energy on the defensive end. And then offensively, you don't even have to worry about him shooting. I think the biggest thing that nobody's really talking about is finally, after what, 5, 6 years, his shot selection has gotten so much better. We're seeing him now pass up threes that he definitely would have taken last year to keep the ball moving, maybe have a hockey assist to a higher percentage shot. So I think that's making all the difference in the world. The fact that he's a willing passer, the only one on this team that can consistently throw a lob, I think really helps them. And he's just inserting himself and inserting his will on this team and against, you know, whoever they're playing. And I think that's the biggest difference. I think to start the year, they played reactive basketball. They were letting teams come in and punch them first. Now we have Marcus in there who's a legit animal. He's just going crazy on both ends. He probably caused, what, 5 or 6 turnovers in this game? You know, huge, huge end of fourth quarter plays that benefit, you know, that's why you live with his, you know, 35% shooting, because he just does so much for you to help you win.
It's Sports Radio WEEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. On the line with me right now from Barstool Sports, it's Dan Greenberg. And Dan, really, you know, now you look at this team and the question really becomes, you know, they're what, 27 games into the season right now. So through 27 games, is Marcus Morris an all-star?
I don't know. He's definitely an all-star in terms of our team. He may even be the MVP at this point. But if he's going to be at the small forward position, I don't think that, you know, he's not going to get in over someone like Kawhi or something like that. So I don't think he'll get the nod, but he has been the best and most consistent player this entire season. He's probably going to make like $15 to $16 million this summer. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's going to get himself a nice big fat contract. So Celtics fans should enjoy him this year, because if this sort of play continues, I mean, it was a surprise to me that the Celtics brought him back this year. I thought for sure he was going to be one of those guys that Danny Ainge was going to try to move, because he was going to be a victim of a lack of minutes because everybody was coming back. And Marcus Morris is not the type of guy we thought that would allow that to sort of happen to him without it becoming an issue. Everybody sort of thought, the general consensus, I think, was that he was going to be a little bit bitchy in the locker room if he lost shot opportunities, if he lost minutes. And we were all completely wrong. He has been mature on and off the court, and he has been cold as ice sometimes with these shots that he's taking and hitting this season. I don't know if it's because it's a contract year or if he's just hitting his stride. But for a guy that the Celtics brought in because he was going to provide a little bit of instant offense off the bench and be the quote-unquote LeBron stopper, he has been the most consistent player on a team that includes guys like Al Horford and Kyrie Irving. And that's something nobody could have predicted, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not. When Ainge made that move and traded Avery Bradley for him, I think we were all a little emotional because Avery was a homegrown guy. And, you know, there was thoughts that this summer, you know, with the potential, you know, luxury tax penalties and things like that, that maybe Ainge would try to move him to get under the tax threshold. But I always keep thinking back to what Wick always says, is he'll pay the luxury tax. He'll pay whatever if it's worth it and if they're contenders for a championship. I think we're all seeing the fact that, you know, them having that line of thinking and not being sort of forced to make these tough decisions to get rid of valuable players is paying off. And if this means that they're repeater tax offenders and, you know, they have to cut a huge check, I think so be it, because this team would not be 17-10 and a game out of, you know, the second spot in the East if he hadn't been playing to this level. And the thing that I've been impressed with is last year you had, you know, it was peaks and valleys. It was 4 games in a row where he was unconscious, 3 games in a row where he would go like 5 for 14. But this year he's been consistent. He's taking high quality shots. There was even a play, I think it was in the third quarter, where, you know, he got an offensive rebound and had a wide open 3, didn't take it, found Kyrie on the baseline for a layup. It's just things like that where everybody is just, all the bad shot selection that we saw last year and in the first, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the season has been, you know, evaporated. And it's why this team is, you know, one of the best offensive teams in the league since the beginning of November, not just since Thanksgiving. You know, they've been a top 10 offense for, you know, a month and a half now, which I don't think anybody saw coming based on how they started.
All right, Dan. So on Monday night, we'll back this thing up a little bit. On Monday night, Anthony Davis comes to town. The Pelicans come to town. The Celtics come away with a win. Anthony Davis winds up with 40-something points. He was great again. And doing what Anthony Davis typically does, where you watch the game, you know he's playing very well, but you don't realize just how well he is playing. You don't realize he literally nearly scores half that team's points until you look at the box score and the game's over. That's how he impacts a game, where he can score that many points. And you don't think, you know, while you're watching the game, that he's dominating just as much as he really is. But more importantly, you know, we've talked about the rumors here for a couple of years. The Celtics want to be in potentially on Anthony Davis if and when he becomes available. Celtics fans let Anthony Davis know. They gave him a nice ovation that, you know, if he were to become available, he would certainly be a welcome addition to this team, whether he signs here as a free agent in a couple of years or if Danny Ainge trades for him in this offseason. However he gets to Boston, Celtics fans sort of let him know that, yeah, we want you here. You know, you're great. We welcome you. You can make this Celtics team better. And I applaud the Celtics fans for doing that. 2 years ago, when Gordon Hayward went through the same thing, comes in as a member of the Jazz, Celtics fans give him a nice ovation. The Celtics fans had heard the rumors that the Celtics would be in on Gordon Hayward at the end of the season in free agency. They let him know that if that's the case, you'd be welcome here. Gave him a nice ovation. Guys like Bomani Jones, guys like Dan Le Batard, Jamel Hill, they took offense to that. We all know what Bomani Jones said, you know, about Boston and saying, you know, and I know that the Celtics fans only felt that way because he looks like Larry Bird. He's white with blonde hair, yada, yada, yada. And Anthony Davis, quite frankly, is not white with blonde hair, and it doesn't matter. Celtics fans want great transformative talent to join their team in any way possible. So as a journalist, Dan, somebody that you've covered this team now for multiple years, you covered this team during that whole issue with Bomani Jones a couple of years ago where he called out Boston once again for being a racist town. When you cover guys like Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen, you've heard what they've said about this town. How at this late stage, how in 2018, we're talking about today, in today's NBA, how can people out there doing my job on the radio, doing your job, writing things out there and being a part of the general media, how are they allowed to still perpetuate these stories that Boston is this sort of a racist town to the point where the only reason you want an NBA superstar to come here is because he's currently the only white NBA superstar in the league?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how any rational person with a brain can form that conclusion. I mean, last time I checked, the only type of player that I want to join the Celtics are the good bad, or you just have to be good. Doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter, you know, your skin color, your hair color, doesn't matter what your shot looks like, as long as it goes in. So for me, it's like, you know, people are always going to say that stuff the same way people still bring up Deflategate, the same Spygate and all that stuff. It's like, you know, it's become, you know, a trendy, you know, hot take type, you know, thing to do to, you know, whenever there's a white person in a Celtics crowd or a Boston crowd cheers him, it has to be because he's white. I think that does a disservice to Gordon Hayward as a basketball player. And I think it just makes the people say that look foolish and really discredits, you know, the people who do have real issues out there. So for me, it's like, listen, they're always going to say it. If you disagree with them, they block you. They don't come on their, you know, shows to defend what they say. So I don't even pay any attention to it. For me, it's like, you know, let's just focus on, you know, trying to convince Anthony Davis to come here in free agency so you don't have to get the team to get him. And who cares what he looks like?
And, you know, if Danny Ainge goes out there this offseason and he signs, what, TJ McConnell and JJ Barrera, well, then maybe we can have a conversation. But until then, it's like, you know, Danny Ainge has done a great job bringing in great basketball talent. And if anybody has proven that it doesn't make a difference what skin color they are, it's Danny Ainge when you look at the talent that he's brought into this team. And truly, I thought the Kevin Garnett era was going to be the end of this conversation, Dan. I really did, because KG was the perfect example. You know, secondhand, he had said that he heard that Boston was still a racist town, and he publicly said that he really didn't want to come here for those reasons. Then he comes here, and he openly says that he was wrong, and he loves it here, and he considers himself a Celtic for life. And if that isn't sort of the sort of be-all, end-all of this conversation, I'm not sure what is ever going to be that be-all, end-all of this conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, you obviously can't discredit and ignore, you know, people's past experiences throughout history. I think that would be ignorant to do. But at the same time, I think, you know, you have to look at a city and a situation that's constantly evolving. So could that have been true in the Russell years and things like that? Of course, I'm sure. And I'm sure there were other cities that were, you know, similar in that nature. But to look around and to see how this city and this team embraces everybody that plays for them, that comes to visit them, regardless of, you know, their race, I think it's just lazy to say, oh, in 2018, they only want Gordon Hayward because he's white. Maybe it's because he was, you know, a fringe All-NBA player who plays the style that this team plays and is actually really good. Like, why can't that be the reason? The same way Anthony Davis is a basketball unicorn. Like, we don't like him just because he looks a certain way. It's because when he gets on the basketball court, he destroys people.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, listen, I just can't believe that we're having this conversation again, but it continues to sort of pop up and perpetuate itself. And quite frankly, the reason it came up tonight is because, you know, Bomani, I wanted to have a conversation with him. And you know me, I'm not going to have a disrespectful conversation. I just had legitimate questions, thinking to myself ignorantly, Dan, that, you know, Bomani said what he said a couple of years ago. There's no getting around that. But I thought sort of the ultimate reply, the ultimate comeback was what Boston fans did on Monday night with Anthony Davis. So I thought maybe that might have a small effect psychologically and maybe change Bomani's opinion a little bit. It's unfortunate. He hasn't brought it up on his radio show, hasn't brought it up on his TV show, and he's refused my request to come on here with me. But, Dan, I thank you for not refusing my request to come on with me tonight and staying up late with me. It means a lot, and we'll talk to you again real, real soon, Dan.
Oh, of course, Patrick. Anytime, you know.
All right, there he goes, Dan Greenberg. Find him on Twitter, at Stool Greeny. Read him on Barstool Sports. The Celtics are rolling, and when the Celtics are rolling, Dan is rolling. He's pumping out those blogs constantly. New content, new content, new content. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. I see you guys on the line. There's a lot to talk about here tonight, a lot of stuff to unpack and get through, because I am just an ignorant white guy on the radio, right? And maybe because I grew up in the suburbs and I'm white, I don't know what I'm talking about. But I do know this, that as somebody that has the responsibility of a microphone in front of my face, I've made mistakes before and I will make mistakes again. Anytime you make a mistake in this medium, the easiest way to get away from that mistake is to address it head on, deal with it, and move on, because people will have to respect you. They might not agree with you, but they are forced to respect the fact that you dealt with it. Right, so I've been in that position before. Kirk's been in that position before. Jerry's been in that position before. People up and down the dial in every market and in every city have been in that position before. That's how you deal with it. I just don't understand how ESPN, still, despite the fact that their ratings suck, they are still the sports and entertainment leader. They are. And they're going to stay that way for a long, long time. When you look at the fact that they own the rights to all these leagues, all these teams, yada, 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 that they are the leader, and there's no getting around that. How they allow a guy like Bomani Jones to say what he said 2 years ago and then have you guys, Bostonians, sort of shut him up and shut him up in a big way by being in the identical situation as what you were in 2 years ago with Gordon Hayward, except this time with an African-American superstar, and you proved them wrong. And the guy, I waited 48 hours before doing this show. Could have done it Monday night. Curtis asked me to come in last night. Could have done it then. All right, but I wanted to wait 48 hours to see if Bomani would address it. I was sure he would. He's yet to address it. I don't think he will. He won't address it on his TV show, won't address it on his radio show, and won't come on with me to talk about it here. And to me, that's very unfortunate. To me, the guy's running scared. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is late night. Room for you guys. When we come back, I'll get to all your phone calls at 617-779-7937.